shanty for the driftless years, oh, to make the clouds clear.
Good afternoon. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor, and today I am so happy to have Scott Beal sitting across from me here in Prod A in the studio. Scott, welcome back to Living Writers.
Thank you so much, T. I'm delighted to be here. I've been looking forward to this conversation. Not much better than sitting down for an hour and talking about poems with one of my dear friends.
So, I've been so looking forward to it, too. And to your book, Stegosaurus Moon, out now this month, June 2026, with DeZank Books.
It's out this coming Tuesday.
So Tuesday will be the launch party at Literati.
That's correct.
Bookstore, 6:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Come one, come all.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's June 16th,
June
right?
16th.
Tuesday, June 16th.
Yep.
6:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Literati Bookstore book launch of Stegosaurus Moon.
Yeah.
What's going to be happening there?
Well, I'm going to be reading some poems. I will have one or two guest poets who will read a poem along with me, you know?
Yes.
Do
you want to reveal?
No.
Reveal?
No, well, wait. I mean, I know for sure one of my former students will be there to read. So I'm really excited about that.
Do you want to say their name?
Are
you
sure. Dominique Witten is coming to read a poem with me. So do you know? Yeah. One of my favorite former students from a poetry class I taught several years ago. And she's a fantastic poet. I've done a couple of readings.
Was this at a workshop in a public school, University of Michigan,
Zone? It was in one of my LaSWA classes, like Lloyd Scholars for Writing in the Arts classes here at the university. So, yeah.
Which you direct. You direct that whole program.
That is true, yes, which is super weird.
It's been years now, though, Scott.
Yeah, yeah. And I've also invited Jocelyn to read a poem, so that would be really exciting.
One of your kids, your youngest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Jocelyn is actually in Stegosaurus Moon.
There's a few poems, yeah. For sure.
And Jocelyn just won an award for their poetry.
Yeah. They were awarded for having an outstanding honors thesis for their collection of poems they submitted at Albion College, where they just graduated in May. So I'm very proud of them, and their work is really cool. So really good stuff. Yeah.
Congratulations, proud papa.
Thanks very
Congratulations.
Much. Thanks.
And you also recently won a teaching award at the University of Michigan.
I suppose that's true, T. I guess I did.
Could you say what it is?
Sure. I was awarded the Lecturer Excellence in Inclusive Teaching Award, which I was nominated by the Sweetland Center for Writing, which is where we both teach. I was nominated three times, and I finally got the award on the third time, you know?
Third time lucky.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my gosh. And many congratulations.
Thanks so much.
This, because you are doing the work, and you have the heart and the vision. So
that's very kind of you to say.
In my opinion, all opinions expressed on WCBN Living Writers are T. Hetzel's alone, and now the part of the University of Michigan, because they've given you this award. They've awarded it.
An award like that's always very humbling. I'm super honored, but it's also like the work of inclusive teaching is something that I do only in collaboration with so many other people. You know, so many other people have helped me improve my inclusive teaching, and you know, so it's all it feels weird to be singled out for an award like that when I'm part of such a cohort of instructors who all care about it and are doing good work in the area, you know.
But to argue with you just a little bit, it's because you're really important in moving this and keeping this fire alive, moving it forward and on campus. And anyway, well, congrats.
Thanks very much.
And congrats to Jocelyn.
Yeah, thanks.
Out there. And hello, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm so glad you did. Before I read your short bio, in the back of Stegosaurus Moon, that will be launched into the world on Tuesday, June 16th. Yeah. What was the first song we heard? Because it was just great to see you in the song.
I'm delighted that you asked. So that song is called Cranberry Bog, and it is by my friend Timothy Monger, who is a singer-songwriter based in Ypsilanti. I met him at a songwriting retreat in the UP several years ago. That Kat, my partner Kat, and I went together. And,
shout out to Kat.
Yeah, yeah. And
in New Orleans.
That's right. That's right. She's doing some collage work in New Orleans right now. Very talented artist. And Tim is an amazing singer-songwriter. And a good friend, and I love his music so much. So when I have a chance to like share it with other people, I'm really happy to.
Oh, I often see him on Instagram. Yeah.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. If you haven't, if anyone isn't familiar with his work, you should check it out.
Awesome. Maybe JAV, maybe you have a photo of Timothy Monger in your collection of, or coming. Yeah. Jason just had a great exhibit of his photographs in Ipsy.
Okay.
Of singer-songwriters and also all kinds of musicians, like awesome. From all musical, but because you wear so many hats, like I love when I go to your website. Could you say the address, Scott?
Oh, it's very
scottbeal.com.
It's just scottbeal.com.
That's
yes.
what I thought, but then I was like, don't just try to make things easy for yourself, T. But no. That's great, scottbeal.com. You're poet, musician, teacher.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a great website. I made it myself in WordPress. I barely remember how to use WordPress anymore, you know, so. but I've been updating the events page for the first time in ages now because I have events and I have, you know, in the new book. So, yeah, so it's not, it shouldn't be totally embarrassing if people go to my website.
And you've got new photographs.
Yeah.
Taken by Aaron Valdez.
That's right. And that's right. Yeah.
So where are some of the places you're going?
In a couple weeks, I'm driving out. Well, so actually on Monday, I'll be at the Chicago Poetry Center doing a performance for them, which I'm very excited about. And then in a couple weeks, I'm driving out to the Northeast. I've got 4 shows in Massachusetts and a show in New Hampshire. And then like a week after I get back from that, me and my friend Ellen Stone, another local poet who's amazing, we're going to...
Friend of the show.
We're doing some readings in Missouri together. We've befriended this man named Justin Hamm, who's the poet laureate of Missouri, and he's invited us out to do some readings there with him. So I'm really excited about that. And yeah, I'm still working on setting up some other things, but that's
like coming in the fall. You and Chris Crowder will have a reading together.
Yeah, that's right.
Somewhere on campus-ish or town-ish.
We're going to read in the Rackham Amphitheater, which is like a shout, but like it's kind of for me a callback to when I was an MFA student here back in the 90s. That's where all of
the green amphitheater.
It's like being in the inside of a turtle shell,
it's beautiful.
It's great. So I'm excited to read there.
Oh, can't wait for that. Yeah. I'll be sure to let everyone know about it too, Scott. Okay. Before we go any further, your bio. In the back of Stegosaurus Moon. Scott Beal is the author of Wait Till You Have Real Problems, Dezank Books 2014, as well as 2 chapbooks, The Octopus, Gertrude Press 2016, and 2 Shakespearean Mad Women Verses, The Detroit Red Wings, White Eagle Coffee Store Press 1998. His poems have appeared in journals such as Rattle, Pleiades, Prairie Schooner, Michigan Quarterly Review, and Indiana Review, and have won awards, including a Pushcart Prize. He directs the Lloyd Scholars for Writing and the Arts at the University of Michigan, Go Blue, and teaches in the Sweetland Center for Writing. He co-hosts the Skazat online poetry series and co-edits the literary journal Public School Poetry. He lives in Ypsilanti, Michigan. And I think the last time you made an appearance, a voice appearance on Living Writers was with Public School Poetry, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And your latest journal has launched, gosh, May? Was it May when the latest edition?
April, I think, is when our spring break issue came out. Yeah.
Oh, of course, April. That's more spring break.
But yeah, actually, earlier today, we had a two-hour meeting all together, all the vice principals at Public School Poetry, to choose like the poems for the next issue for the fall.
Julie Babcock, David Ward, Megan Louvod.
Yeah, and Ellen Stone. Yeah.
And Ellen Stone, the aforementioned Ellen Stone.
Right.
Yes. Wow. So the next one is you're cooking up the next Public School Poetry.
It's going to be great. We got so many good poems. Yeah.
Ah, and then the essays to come. So folks can check that website out too, Public School Poetry.
PublicSchoolPoetry.com. Yeah. Yeah. We have 6 issues there now and a 7th coming in the fall. So
it's. Wow, I'm starting to feel so very old. Like, it's amazing how time goes by. And because it seems like almost like you all just started this huge project. And it's such a wonderful thing for community and building poetry community, like in Ann Arbor, but outside of Ann Arbor, because the poets can be anywhere. And they write to each other about their poems anonymously. And then you publish these essays.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the distinctive characteristic of our journal is this. Yeah, in the spirit of public school, we assign each poet we publish gets assigned another poet whose work we're publishing in the same issue, and they're asked to write a 5-paragraph essay. You know, and we're trying, you know. With all the irony of being a composition teacher at the university, trying to get my students not to write 5-paragraph essays, but it's really fun seeing what poets take that form. You know, poets love to take forms and do interesting things with them. So you give them this kind of received form that has a lot of baggage associated with it, and then people take it in all kinds of different directions. You know, so it's really fun. We'll see what they do.
And when folks head to that website, they can hear your own composition of the fight song for Public School Poetry.
That's true. I didn't bring my guitar today to do it in the studio or anything, but yeah.
A missed opportunity for me. Well, you know what? Folks can probably hear you on stage in Ipsy this coming summer. Do you have some dates where you'll be playing at the pub?
I have, yes. I have. July 29th, I want to say, but there's sometime in late July when I'll be at the Ipsy Ale House to perform. And I'm going to do a bunch of songs, but I'm actually going to mix in some poems and kind of do like a songs that are related to themes in the poems and kind of make it a joint set to kind of, musically amplify the book in some way. So I'm excited for that show.
That sounds so cool. Yeah. And I love how you just said musically amplify the book too. It's like, cause it's almost like, collaborating with yourself in a strange way, like bringing more elements and genres.
I mean, it's interesting too. I mean, cause a lot of, you know, I was writing songs at the same time as I was writing some of these poems, you know, and I've written songs that are about some of the same experiences that some of the poems are about. So there are definitely some overlaps and echoes between them. So I've started to kind of imagine what that set list will look like. And, you know, also there's going to be poor people who've come to the Ipsy Ale House just to eat and hear some music. So they're not necessarily going to want to be inundated with poems. So I'm going to try to be judicious in how I fit the poems in, you know, but yeah, I think it'll be fun.
Scott, well, let's see. Before we go to break, maybe, no, you know what? Let's go to break right now. And when we come back on the other side of it, I'll do your bio. I promise everyone. Today, I did it. Goodness, Scott. Thank goodness. Full disclosure, everyone, Scott and I are good friends, and perhaps I'm a bit too relaxed. JAV, make sure you cut me off at the end of this, okay? All right. Thanks for being here, everyone. You've got Living Writers on WCBN FM Ann Arbor. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got JAV behind the glass, Scott Beal in the author's seat. We'll be back.
There's a million, billion, trillion stars, but I'm down here low, fussing over scars on my soul, 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 I am so infinitesimal. decimal. Oh, they say it started with a big bang, but they say it came out of a small thing. Lately, I'm feeling like a big bang, 'cause I've been making something out of nothing.
Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel, and today on the program, Scott Beal is here. His book, Stegosaurus Moon. The book launch is next week on Tuesday, June 16th at Literati, 6:30 p.m. Hope to see you there. So, Scott, who did we just hear?
That's that was a band called Mother Mother that actually Jocelyn is probably the reason that I'm a big fan of them now. Jocelyn got me into Mother Mother, and so. Yeah, they're great. They're great. And we got to go see them a couple years ago in concert together, which is really good. Yeah. But yeah, I love Mother Mother.
Thanks for playing them today.
Sure.
Okay. So Scott, earlier, just when we were talking before the break, you were mentioning places you were going on tour with Stegosaurus Moon, where folks could connect and hear you read, see you. And you mentioned the Chicago Poetry Center.
Mm-hmm.
And you said a performance. And so a performance instead of a reading. So let's talk about that.
Okay.
So how, when you, I've seen you, quote unquote, read or so, but it's also, it feels like it is a performance because often the poems are inside you and you're not reading from the book. Is that what you mean by performance, or is each, like, is it the book? Like, if you read it from a book, is it also the performance, or what do you?
Yeah, I kind of, I mean, I kind of use those terms interchangeably. So don't read too much into it. But yeah, I think a reading is a performance, you know, whether people think of it as one or not, you know, and I used to get frustrated a lot when I was like back in grad school, you know, as a younger poet, I'd go to these poetry readings, sometimes by poets who I adored, whose work I adored, and they would read their poems as if they themselves didn't care that much about the language, you know, there's a certain lilt that was almost every reading I went to, where poets would be like, the toad is on the walk and slithers along the ground. And springs are, yeah, I don't know, you know, like
don't
there's this kind of like
stuck in my head,
this kind
Scott.
Of two-tone lilt that almost every poem you would hear would have this very like, and I think there was almost,
it was like a poet's voice at some point.
And I think it was especially like, you know, university affiliated poets and publishing poets, I think there was almost this sense that if you performed the poems too much, it was like cheating, you know, like it's, you're not letting the words do all the work. You're animating them too much. So it's going to make them seem like there's more there than there is. And that felt like gauche or something. Right.
There's so some people want a divide between like slam poetry poem, like what is a poem?
Yeah. I mean that, you know, I think that tired debate is kind of over now.
Thankfully, goodness.
You know, yeah. but that was a real thing. Like when I was in grad school, we had the second oldest poetry slam in the country was here in Ann Arbor. And I suggested going at one point to some of my other MFA kind of colleagues, and they were like, nah, we don't, it's not really poetry. It's just who can shout the loudest, you know? So
but that's not true.
No, so I mean, but I didn't, so I didn't actually check it out until years later. And I actually met some slam, like practicing slam poets whose artistry was amazing, and they were writing amazing poems, and then they were also delivering them. There was a poet friend I had who described it as like a separate scholarship, you know, like there's a scholarship to like the performance.
It
and
is.
I think that that's so, and I've dabbled in poetry slam. I'm certainly not a poetry slam poet but I don't think anybody really is, you know, like we're just poets and some people perform in different ways and in different venues and mediums. And, I mean, I'm lucky some of the places I'm going to be performing like out East are poetry slam venues, which are, you know, which will be fun. And so I kind of feel like I have to have my chops right, you know, to be able to like, to be taken seriously in some of those spaces. So.
There will be some different expectations audiences.
Yeah. But they also, you know, audiences at slams too are now open to, like, they understand that there's different, you know, they don't expect everybody to be a slam voice, especially, you know, in features, you know, they're just looking to hear good poems too. And so, but yeah, so I use the word performance, but like I said, it's not like I will be doing a song and dance, you know, like I'll be doing my poems and I'll be doing them as well as I can. And some will be from memory and some will be from the book, you know, because there's also, I have memorized a few of these poems. I'm working on maybe memorizing a few more. But I also think that there's something to be said for holding the book in my hands, yes, up on, you know, in front of people. And there's, I'm proud of this book, so I want to, you know, I want to have it with me too. So.
Oh my gosh, Scott, both ways.
Yeah.
What does it look like to, when you memorize a poem, like how do you like have a poem in you that you know when you're standing up in front of a bunch of people or so, it's there for you?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it's easier than you would think to memorize your own poems because you've already spent so much time with them. You've gone over the lines and over the lines writing them. So like there's, you know, one of my partner's favorite words is the word stigmergy. And like stigmergy is when like, when something comes like, people follow, like the way certain paths, like if people cut through a park instead of following the sidewalk, and then people cut through, and then a path becomes worn
like
there.
An elephant, you know, like path. I didn't know the longer term, but I call it an elephant path.
Yeah. So, gosh, I hope I'm not misdefining the word stigmergy now, because Kat will kill me. But I think there's something about that with memorizing your own work, because you've already been over the language so many times in the writing of it, so you're kind of rediscovering it, and you know.
And moving within it.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it's just a matter of like repetition. Like, you know, like memorizing anything is a matter of, you know, like you break it down into parts, you kind of go over them and go over them, you get a few lines down, and then you move on to the next few lines, and, you know. So I've been doing that. I added two new memorized poems to my repertoire just like a couple days ago. You know, I'm trying to, yeah, so.
Well, let's hear a poem now. Do you want to read one from the book or one from?
I'll try one from memory. Let's see how this goes. Like,
what?
So I'll do a poem. This is called One Tiny Everyday Problem. Hi, I'm getting divorced, and that's like having your face torn off with flypaper. Everything people saw when they saw you is gone. I've lived through tornadoes in a closet. It was dark, but I had a flashlight. Yes, I know this is a toll booth. Oh, gosh. So I've just forgotten. I'm nervous being in the studio with you, T.
You know, No, you're not. Right. I shouldn't have started. I started videoing you without your permission.
No, too, it's okay. So. It's okay. So here. I'm so sorry. I'm going to start from the beginning. I'm gonna have the book as something to lean on if I need it. But One Tiny Everyday Problem. Hi. I'm getting divorced, and that's like having your face torn off with flypaper. Everything people saw when they saw you is gone. I've lived through tornadoes in a closet. It was dark, but I had a flashlight. Yes, I know this is a toll booth. When I was a kid, I had a dog named Lucky, and I loved him, but he bit me, so they sent him away. I'll call you Lucky. You remind me of him. My wife never told me I was beautiful in 17 years. You might think I take a lot of drugs, but I don't. Yes, I know my Honda is blocking traffic, but it saved my bacon so many times. Some clown drops a toolbox in the middle of I-94 and I stop dead from 60. But then backing out of a tight space, I tore the side all to hell and had to drop $1,600 to fix it. Yes, that's another metaphor for divorce. Yes, actually, you do look like a therapist glaring down from your perch and telling me what I owe. I'm doing all right. I say that all the time. The place I live now, it's like this barn my grandpa made me when I was a kid. Plain cedar painted red and green with windows and lofts and two sliding doors. But there were no tractors, no animals. It was this intricate empty space with my name on it. I've still got it all up in here. I don't mean to complain. Like, you just stand here all day and smell exhaust and take money. Nothing but asphalt before you. But look at the gleaming metal coats, the rude mud flaps. Even you, Lucky. Everyone deserves to hear they're beautiful, even when you draw blood.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, too.
I'm so glad you chose to read that one. I love that one.
I feel like it's kind of like a, I mean, it's the first poem in the second section of the book, but I think it also kind of works as like an intro to some of the themes of the collection, because, like, you know, divorce is like a really central kind of starting point, I guess, for this collection, you know, and it's, I mean, I think, and especially like the earlier poems really focus on it, and then the kind of themes kind of multiply and spread out from there. But I think that, you know, the book is really rooted in my experience of my divorce. And So I think that's a fair introduction to some of the collection, you know.
And when did you start writing these, drafting these poems?
Sure. I mean, let's see. My marital separation began in 2011, and my divorce was finalized in 2013. And so I was writing poems throughout that time. I mean, there's poems in the book that predate that too. So like there's this series called birthday poems in the book. And, you know, like I used to write my ex a poem every year on her birthday. And so some of the poems, especially the ones that show up later in the book, were written kind of before any of the separation stuff started. And they kind of like, but then there are some that were written like well after, you know, kind of, so the poems are scattered throughout, you know. And I think, I mean, the most recent poem is one I wrote like maybe a year and a half ago, you know, so there are some that are more recent, but I think a lot of the collection was finished by around 2016, 2017. Like a lot of those poems were really written during that stretch. You know, and I was also writing, so you mentioned my chapbook in the bio, The Octopus, right? Like, you know, which is also a collection that is largely about like heartbreak and separation. And I think at some point I got tired of writing about it in my own voice. Like I'm writing all these self-pitying poems. I need to get out of that space. And so I started writing these poems about an octopus going through a marital separation or a breakup. And it made it kind of fun, but I still had all these poems built up that were, you know, so after I kind of got through that, I kind of went back through some of the other poems, and I had to weed out a lot of really bad maudlin, you know, verse about, you know, woe is me stuff that wasn't really very good. But there's, you know, I mean, going through a divorce is a really complicated thing, you know, and it affects you and it affects a lot of people around you. And it was, you know, it was kind of a formative event in the second half of my life, you know, it's both an ending and a beginning in a lot of ways, you know? And so a lot of the poems are reflecting on that ending, but also thinking about what it means as a beginning and like where you go forward from there, you know?
And that's in the structure of it too. Like how it's,
you think,
by the end. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I hope so. I hope so. You know, I mean, that's the idea. So, yeah.
But I think you had said you didn't try to put these in chronologically at all. And like, there's different things at work, and that's perhaps why you also have the sections.
Yeah. I mean, there was an early version of this manuscript where the poems were much more chronological, you know? And I think, a model book at one point for me is like, the Sharon Olds collection, Stag's Leap, you know, which is Sharon Olds' book about her divorce, which had just recently come out when I was going through mine. So that was a really important book to me just as a reader and as a person, you know, with a heart, you know, going through a difficult time. And, but that book is much more kind of organized kind of chronologically, like step by step through the process of thinking about that. And so I think an early version of my collection was also very chronological in orientation. And I got some advice from another poet friend of mine. There's a poet friend of mine named Sean Thomas Doherty, who's amazing. And he looked at the collection for me at one point and kind of suggested moving some things around, and which is really valuable. So yeah, I prefer the non-linear path.
Why?
Through it.
Yeah.
Why? Well, because I mean, because in some ways, chronological order tells one kind of truth, but it also obscures other kinds of truth. You know, like there's ways in which your experience of going through heartbreak is recursive. It's not linear. It's not a progress narrative. You know, so there's thoughts that you cycle back to, and you know, like there's things you don't leave things behind as you're moving forward. It's all kind of bundled up together. So I think this organization, the collection, I mean, it allows the experiences to kind of like grow and bloom over time, but not in like a linear way. It's more of a like an accumulation of possibilities of experience, I think.
Yeah. And how many times were you like reworking the manuscript or sending it out, Scott?
Oh, well, that's the sending it out is a whole other saga we can talk about if you want.
Let's take a short break and then we'll come back to that.
Sure.
Today on Living Writer, Scott Beal is here. His book, Stegosaurus Moon, is on the table with us. It's out this coming Tuesday. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. We'll be back. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm so glad you did. Today on Living Writers, Scott Beal is here in the studio. His book, Stegosaurus Moon, published this June by DeZank Books, located in Ypsilanti, Michigan. Scott, who did we just hear?
So yeah, that was Samantha Crane. She is an indigenous Choctaw singer-songwriter. And I like Mother, as I mentioned before, is a band I learned about through Jocelyn and became a big fan of. Samantha Crane, I learned about through my other kid, Alex. And so yeah, Alex and I, last time I visited them out in, they live in Minneapolis, St. Paul. And we went to see her live and it was fantastic. And yeah, so I've become a big fan of Samantha Crane since then. Yeah.
Was it in like a venue where it was pretty intimate?
Yeah, it was actually at a club that I had dragged us to the previous time I was there because I was on a big Replacements kick, and of course the Replacements are there, and so it was one of the clubs that they used to play when they were kind of getting their start. So it was really exciting to see Samantha Crane there.
Very, very cool.
Yeah.
So right before the break, we were talking about like the life of sending out, you've got a manuscript, sending out the book. What was that like for Stegosaurus Moon? What did that look like?
Yeah. I mean, this is always a challenge, you know, like, so many books get published through contests, you know, like either you have to win a contest or there are presses that have like open reading periods, but the open reading periods they're open for a fee, you know, so there's fees associated with these things. So you send the manuscript here, it's $25. If you send it there, it's $30. So that can get pretty expensive, you know, because there's hundreds of them. And also your odds of getting through any of them is pretty infinitesimal, you know?
Because there's a series of readers, like, before it gets to, like, the judge.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but also, I mean, there's so many hungry poets out here with great books of poems that are trying to get published, so, like, the competition is pretty fierce, you know? but, you know, so I had some close calls in some of those. You know, I was a finalist in this contest and a semifinalist in this contest. I think, you know, I sent it through the Copper Canyon open reading period, and I got a message back that was like, oh, it was really good. It was really close, but not quite, you know, for the right fit, you know? And it's like, those are heartbreaking moments. Oh, you're like, oh, it's such a close break, you know?
Yeah, shout out to Copper Canyon. Their open reading period is now too, I think.
Could be, yeah. I don't have a manuscript for them right now, but because this, you know, but
maybe others do.
Yeah, for sure. But, you know, and then, so I had a, there was a press that said that they wanted to publish the book, or they had a process that they wanted. And so I signed a contract saying I wouldn't send it out anywhere else.
For how long?
Until it got through their review. They had to send it out to a couple other reviewers and get their buy-in, and then it would be acquired. And so, but during that process, they asked me not to send it out anymore. So I didn't. And then I didn't hear from them for a year and a half, you know, and I would send messages and not hear back. And then I found out that the editor that had told me that they wanted to publish it was fired, and no one told me. And I wrote back to the press and no one wrote back. And so I don't want to out them who it was, you know, but that was really difficult, because then I felt like I lost basically 2 years of sending it out and also all my momentum. So then I went another 2 years without sending it out, you know, because I was just kind of flabbergasted by that whole experience. And But, you know, like Zank Books published my first book and...
In 2014.
Yeah. And I went back to them to see if they would be interested in this book. And they took their time with it. And then, but yeah, eventually they were excited to publish it. So, and part of the reason I hadn't started with them is because, you know, when they published my first book, they published my book and they published a book of poems by Jeff Cass. And those are the only two books of poems they had ever published at that stage, because they were mostly known as a fiction press and still are. And what convinced me to send it, so I didn't approach them, because then they didn't keep publishing poems. They published those two and they kind of stopped publishing poems for a while. And I'd heard that they were publishing, I think, Keith Taylor's book of collected or selected poems. You know, it was like a kind of, they opened the door back up to poetry. And that's why I went back to them to see if they would be interested in this collection. And thankfully they were. And I'm really excited. I mean, I think the book is, it looks beautiful. It's, you know, I'm really excited working with them now. It's been a really good working relationship with them. So.
It is a beautiful book. Let's talk about the cover.
Sure, sure. The cover painting... it's a painting called The Slower Lawn Chair by a painter named Scott Everingham, who's another friend of mine. I met him at the Vermont Studio Center back in 2017 and just fell in love with his paintings immediately. And we kind of talked about the idea of him doing the cover art when my next book comes out. And so when Zank took the book, I asked him if he would let me use one of his paintings of the cover. And I chose this one. You know, we talked about this idea of,
and you sent him the manuscript, right?
Honestly, I don't know if I did. No, he didn't, like, he gave me, like, he was like, look through these images, find one you want. And, you know, so we went back and forth, like, about that for a while. But I loved this picture because, you know, I was mentioning before these themes of, like divorce as both a beginning and as an ending, you know, or, like, both as an ending and as a beginning, like, kind of things are coming apart and also coming together, you know. And I think that there... It's an abstract painting, but it also has suggestions of, like, architecture and structure. You know, it's one of the things I love about all of Scott's work. And in particular here, there's the image that kind of is central on the cover. It looks like the frame of a house that is both kind of coming apart and coming together. And that kind of duality of the structure really felt like it represented the collection in ways that I liked. So yeah.
And a barn, too, that we just heard about.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's interesting. There's also another poem in the book that also mentions a barn that I have even more in mind when I think about this cover. I'm happy to read it. So this is a poem. It's at the end of the first section of the book, and it's called Concessions. Concessions. My name held to your name with a single suture you may clip from the closed wound. You may shed it like a vestigial tail or dry bloom, trade it away for a shift in the breeze. The memory of my body beside you in bed is an empty bag you may fill and refill with the tuneless music of other lungs. The feel of my hands around your waist, a sugar block dissolving in dew. The history of what my smile once meant will lie closed in a book of photographs and beneath our children's changing faces or tangled in the lines of mine at funerals of friends we loved together. The places on your skin my lips have touched are dust you vacuumed from the rugs. The future in which you brace my body on the day my father dies is an abandoned barn along Pleasant Lake Road. The roof has sagged, snow pours through slats, and all the straw is rotten. But it's still there. I can't bear to tear it down, though I'd need my father's eye to show me what wood's worth salvaging, to what use I could put it.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you, T.
What were you going to say just then?
Oh, I don't know. No, I don't know.
Okay.
I await your next question.
Oh. Concessions. And so this is also interesting because there's scenes with your ex and you also meeting in lawyers' offices or in lobbies outside or at your own past kitchen table.
Yeah.
Or yeah. Dining room table. Or
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right. Because, I mean, a big part of... So we had a very amicable divorce, you know, like, and we still get along well together. You know, I just saw, my ex Colleen, like, yesterday. You know, like, you know, we still talk about our kids and, you know, collaborate on things. And we actually get together with the kids at holidays. Like sometimes, you know, we'll do like birthday celebrations together and Christmas celebrations together. So like we have a good co-parenting relationship, and we're still friendly with each other. You know, going through a divorce is hard, but we also, you know, and it's also hard with children. You want to make sure that, you know, like, divorce is hard on children. You want to do whatever you can to make it as painless as possible, or as you know. And so we worked really well together on that, and it was so we worked with a mediator on kind of figuring out all of the divorce stuff, you know, and like, you know, how, so many things from custody to like, you know, to what to do financially, you know, like all those things. And so it was and so that process, yeah, it's part of the book in a few of these poems. And I think the title Concessions is, you know, an imaginative kind of metaphorical way of thinking about that part of the process of like deciding who gets what in the divorce, you know, like that sort of thing. And so it's kind of like, it's in this tone of conceding, like, I give these things back to you, or, you know, you can, you, this, these are things you can, and I hope that, you know, like, I hope that it's generous, you know, I wanted to feel like, I hope this is something that comes through in the poems, because I really want to, you know, it's a painful thing to go through, to separate your lives. And we were married, like I mentioned in one of the poems, 17 years, you know? So it's a lot to disentangle your lives, and it hurts, you know, there's no way for it not to hurt. And people get angry and frustrated with each other through it. But I think I want it to also come through that I wanted to approach it with generosity, you know, for both of us, you know, and not to, yeah, like, I don't know.
Approach the divorce, Scott?
Yeah, yeah.
And also, what did you allow for yourself for the writing of the poems?
What did
Because you are a poet. And so it's like this in a way is like, is a poetry memoir of sorts for, because you chose not, like, you didn't write a memoir about it. You write song lyrics, you compose, you know, the compositions to go, like, you have other ways of making too. But for you was like the compulsion, was it primarily coming through the poems?
Partly, you know, I mean, yes, I do write songs and, but poetry, and I've never written a memoir. I mean, I've written a few essays that are short here and there, but like, this is how I work and how I think through poems. And I think poems are I tried to describe it as like, I think they're like a technology for exploration, you know, in a way. Like, it's, you know, it is like a way of like, it's a set of tools you use to ask questions and dig into things and try to understand or shape or, you know, engage with the world more fully. Right. And so, you know, going through a divorce, you have a lot of thoughts, you have a lot of feelings, you have a lot of experiences, you're trying to make sense of them. And poetry for me was like a good set of techniques and tools to try to come to terms with that, you know, to try to understand myself through that, to understand the things that were closing and the things that were opening, you know.
And do you, it seems like you're also a poet that does value community as part of the process. Like, you're just back recently from Bear River. Already mentioned the Vermont Studio Center. Like, how does this work for part of your, is it generative for you? You've been to other places too.
I mean, yeah, those conferences were both extremely generative for me, you know, and there's poems in the book that were begun at both of the, you know, like at the Bear River Writers Conference or at the Vermont Studio Center, you know, so yeah, poems spread throughout the book. I mean, it's interesting because divorce is also something that you largely go through it alone, you know, like at least, like I said, other people are affected and going through it too, but like your kids are going through divorce, but they're not going through it the way you're going through it. And in fact, you can't share with them a lot of what you're going through, you know, like your ex is going through it, but they're going through it also with their own experience that is in some ways at odds with your experience. And in some ways is parallel to your experience. There's, you know, you have community of friends and people that you're leaning on, you know, family, right? Like, so it is spread among a community, but there's also something that's pretty solitary about it. And the poems are a way of dealing with those more kind of inner solitary parts of it and trying to, and but also writing the poems and then reading them to people is also a way of sharing that, and it becomes part of the community, I guess. Yeah.
Scott, we're going to take a short break. Today on Living Writers, Scott Beal is here in the studio, Stegosaurus Moon, the book on the table with us, out with Dezank Books. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got JAV behind the glass. We'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers on WCBN. And if you're just tuning in, I'm so glad you did, because you're just in time to catch the last part with Scott Beal, poet Scott Beal. And we're talking about his book that's going to be out next week, Stegosaurus Moon with Dezank Books. So, Scott, what did we just hear?
Yeah, so that is a band called Dalriada. They are a Hungarian folk metal band that that is one of my favorite bands. And yeah, and I put it on the list because there is a poem in the book. I'm not going to read it because it's a little long.
And I do love that one.
We want to get to, but there's a poem in the book that is about, you know, it's about hearing them kind of for the first time at a time that in my life that was really difficult, and how it kind of was. You know, I think music is also a super important part of my life. Like that's not groundbreaking. It's an important part of most of our lives, you know, but yeah, the way that I especially also like, there's some, obviously it's not in English. I have no idea what any of the lyrics are, you know, to any of their songs. And I love being able to listen to songs in like, it's like rock songs, metal songs, punk songs in a foreign language that it's like, it's kind of about whatever I want it to be about, because I don't know what they're saying.
It's the
so
feeling.
What they're saying is they're speaking directly to my soul, or whatever it is I'm going through right now, that's what they're unraveling. And there's something like imaginatively that I feel like you can get in touch with the music in a really different way, in the sense of like there's a human voice that is conveying something, but the lyrics aren't getting in the way. It's a weird thing to say as a poet, because I also deeply care about lyrics.
Yes, you know, yes, you do. Yeah. And in the poem, there is a friend that goes and sees the show and then brings back, like, fights to the front after being in the pit.
Yeah.
To get the set list.
Yeah, I mean, the title of the poem is Abad with the Dalriada set list. And yes, I had a friend who went to see them play. I've never seen them live, but a friend of mine did, and then brought me back the set list, which was like a treasured possession for me for a long time. Yeah. I think it's, I don't know exactly where it is now. Like, you know, like, but
it'll come back. It'll come back around. And now the poem is here.
Yeah, exactly.
Forever. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So Scott, you've mentioned both Jocelyn and Alex.
Yeah.
And they are, your children, not only characters in Stegosaurus Moon. I don't know. How do they feel about being in poems? And also now, since Jocelyn is also a poet.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a good question, and it's something that I, because it's not like I ask their permission to write poems about them, you know. Like I didn't ask my ex's permission to write these divorce poems about, you know, like, I think different writers feel different ways about these kinds of things, you know? And I, you know, I actually, my kids are used to me writing poems about them. I mean, my first book has poems that are about them too, you know? And like, I know that, so for example, there's a poem in my first book called Things to Think About that was kindled by this practice where, Alex at one point became afraid of dying in a fire and couldn't sleep because of it. And so one night they asked me to give them three things to think about to help them not, like, you know, to be able to fall asleep instead of thinking about their worries about fire. And then it became, the next night they wanted it again. And then it became, for many years, every single night I had to give my kids three things to think about at night. So this became a poem in the book. And Alex has plans, I think, to get some lines from that poem as a tattoo someday. So, like, so there are ways in which I know that my kids don't always mind when I write poems inspired by them. But I don't know if, yeah. So obviously I'm also, I try to be generous with, you know, I'm not trying to, like, my poems about them are always from a place of care, you know, like, and exploring as a parent, like what it is like to be a parent of kids who have their own challenges and identities and issues and, yeah. And wanting to reflect that with love. And also for me to try to grapple with, like, what does it mean to be the parent of a kid who's, you know, who's experiencing changes to their identity, who's experiencing different kinds of sadness or struggle, you know? And so, yeah, so I end up writing about them a lot because it is a big part of my life, is thinking about them as people and my relationship to them. You know, they're, you know, two of the most important people on earth to me and always will be, you know? And so it's impossible for me not to write about them at times. And yeah.
Would you read us a poem?
Sure. I mean, it's, yeah, let's see. I don't know which, okay, so here, I'm going to read a poem. This is a reverse abecedarian. I will say, like, this is a poem that is for, it's about Alex, and Alex is someone whose whose identity has shifted, you know? So they were assigned female at birth. They now use often he, him pronouns and identify as a trans man largely. So, but not also in a strictly binary way. It's complicated, you know, it's always complicated and interesting. And but yeah, so this is a poem I wrote about reflecting about that change in name. And like, this is one of those poems I wrote the first draft of at Bear River. Actually, I was in a workshop, I think with Linda Gregerson, and she assigned us an abecedarian poem. And I had already written an abecedarian poem like a few years back, from another Bear River workshop. So I was like, I'm going to do a reverse abecedarian, and the name change became like a good structure for that. So this poem is called Zoe to Alex. Zane, like Zoe, a Z Omega anomaly of a name, would have been your given had you been born a boy. We liked the zing, like Zoe, like Xavier, but less precious with no initial X. You already know the X where this is headed, the chest buried at the end of your map, variable that lets you flex inside it. How to tell this metamorphosis, uncertain Ovid as I am? You've changed. You change. And yeah, that's adolescence, but there's more than height spurt and hormone spike in this translation you've rendered of yourself. You've kept Zoe's rhythm, her fuss-free trochee, recoined the name less quirky, more queer. However little I've loved being stuck in the masculine, your pronoun pins, they, them today, he, him tomorrow, would never occur to me. I admire the genius of choice, affixing a democratic neurodiversity to your lapel like a paisley pocket square, but much more radically fashion forward. I'll show you how to wind a necktie. Let you show me how you stick that dusting of galactic glitter to your face, keeping your smirk lit like a shattered chandelier in schoolroom's jaundiced flicker. You're right to roll your eyes when I ask why. I don't have to get every nuance. I won't ask to. But these jerks, Alex, humdrums, folks that fancy themselves plain, unadorned by spite, regular grunts as if regulation and grind are the badge and passport that should formally warrant citizenship. They pose with shotguns by the bathroom, exercise their right to join Westboro pickets, refuse to believe that penis or lack is not the complete answer key. They know the two prisons chromosomes come in. Prisons, not prisms. I'm not telling you, be careful, Alex. I'm not pushing you to be any Alex. I'll watch and listen for the full phalanx, your ranging glow of flux and outfox.
Oh, thank you, Scott.
I had to quickly edit a couple words
Thanks.
Out of that.
I appreciate that for the FCC. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Nice on the fly. I'm so glad you chose that one to read. It was beautiful to read it on the page, but the movement in it with your voice is just, yeah, so happy to be able to be here with you and get to hear you choose that one to read.
Well, I'm glad. Yeah. I mean, Alex is phenomenal, you know, like, and, I've learned a lot from my kids, you know, and watching them, and yeah, they're amazing. And yeah, so I, again, it's a poem that I hope is celebrating, you know, of their identity and the ways in which they're embracing and growing into who they really are in ways that are, you know, when you're a parent, you can't predict that, you know, like there's a thing about giving someone a name too, and then having them change it. That is like a, you know, like, there's another poem in the book that has the lines like, it's not monstrous to wonder, but it is monstrous to say it. What was wrong with the name I gave you?
Yes.
You know, like, so that, like, there's a thing that happens where you're like, but I liked that, you know, but, yeah. but it's also not for them anymore. And you have to allow people, and not allow, I mean, like you have to go along with,
be with,
yeah. Accompany people on their journeys and let them steer and let them, you know, yeah.
'Cause all life is transformation.
Absolutely.
For each of us. If we're lucky or doing it, trying, if we're doing it right, I guess, or I don't know, right and wrong. This is such a heavy thing, but
it's true. Yeah. And I mean, there's also poems in the book about my own journeys with identity and gender and queerness,
yes.
You know, and like, and I'm not outwardly and openly queer in the same ways that my kids are, but I also am not, I am not a fixed thing, you know, like I am also someone who, whose identity is multiple and growing and still being discovered by me, you know? And so that's also something that I'm excited about in some of these poems, are the ways in which I'm also through the poems and through the experiences that are related by the poems, kind of still discovering myself, you know?
Definitely the final poem of the book is part of that.
Yeah. I think of it that way. Yeah, for sure.
Scott Beal, today it's been so super to get a chance to talk with you about Stegosaurus Moon. Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, it's been a real pleasure. I can't believe that the hour is up, you know? It's like, I could talk to you all day about poems, tea.
I'd love it. Yeah. I'd love it. We'll keep going. Well, not right now, everyone. Don't worry. We know we've got more of a... just Jason is wiping his brow now. Scott will be at Literati Bookstore on Tuesday, June 16th, 6:30 p.m., reading poems from Stegosaurus Moon, performing, if you will, as his poet self, with friends, reading select poems. Thanks so much to JAV for engineering and the music today and keeping Living Writers website up and at 'em. And also hi to Mom. Thanks to everyone out there for listening. Next week, I wanted to give a quick shout out. Guest host Amanda Yulee talks with Dave Eggers about his latest novel. Thanks again to Scott Beal. I'm T. Hetzel. Until next time. Black man.
Hello?
WCBN FM, Ann Arbor. We're still here, even when you're not listening.
Listening to WCBN FM Ann Arbor, and it is now time for the Drive Time pre-polka party, followed by the Drive Time polka party. I will be your hostess, Sarah Min. We're going to get things started on a jaunty note.